to Marketing 2.0, a new channel with podtech.net. I'm Eric Vidal, and I manage the brand advertising at WebEx Cisco. And today we have a special guest, and we're going to talk about not just Marketing 2.0, but conversational marketing and what that means and what a marketing person can expect or how they might be able to market in conversational media. Please welcome our guest, John Battelle. He's an entrepreneur, journalist, professor. He founded and or co-founded several businesses. Wired Magazine is my favorite. Most recently, he is the founder and chairman of Federated Media, and we'll talk a little bit about what Federated Media is and how it fits into this new Marketing 2.0. But first, welcome, John.
Thank you, Eric. Thanks for having me. I'm pleased to be here.
Well, I'm going to start off with my first question, John, is, you know, we talk about Marketing 2.0 or whatever you want to call it, conversational marketing, and there's this dramatic shift going on in marketing. I think no one can argue that.
Right.
And some of it is this natural growth of Web 2.0, and as it refers to this transformation of marketing resulting from the network effect of the Internet, I mean, who better to talk about it than the person who just launched the Web 2.0 conference, right?
Yeah, I have a lot of hats recently, and one of them I'm very proud of is launching the Web 2.0 conference with Tim O'Reilly a few years ago, and it certainly gathered steam and become quite a gathering spot. But it really was staring at the kind of, I guess you could say, the root economics of the web that led me to some of the writings and certainly starting the company Federated Media. And just noticing shifts in the economics of media that, you know, it's one thing like when we were at Wired in the mid-90s, sort of jumping up and down and dreaming big dreams about how the world was going to change and sort of, you know, imagining that world, so to speak, 10 years ago. It's quite another when the world starts giving you data and saying, well, this is really just changing. And, you know, there's nothing anyone can say to stop this change. So how do we go about practicing in this change? And that's really, I think, where we are now is we've gone from declarative statements about the future to, you know, really living in the present in terms of conducting business in a world of conversational media and Web 2.0.
Well, John, I mean, I think, you know, marketing has changed for a lot of us. And me, you know, I'm a marketeer, so it's changed for me. And, you know, the ad agencies I deal with, it's definitely changed for them. But someone who maybe doesn't get brought up a lot is the publishing side.
Right.
How does it change for them and what they offer to their audiences, but also to the marketing partners that they work with? And I know that Federated Media is really trying to support and connect independent website authors and audiences. And
right.
You know, and the way I say it, I just boil it down to they get it. So
that's a wonderful. I've been looking for a slogan. Can we use that one?
help the audience understand.
Sure. This really comes, you know, it's best told in a little parable having to do with one of the most popular blogs in the world, Boing Boing. And back about 3 years ago when I was finishing up writing my book on Google, I had spent, you know, Google and search. I was fascinated by search, and one of the reasons I was fascinated is it struck me it was the access point in a very important transition in how businesses conduct business. And I just don't mean conduct business on the Internet. I mean conduct business, period, because it was such a radical and, you know, incredibly fast shift of marketing dollars. People started spending money in search engines, and over the course of about 7 years, you know, it grew to a multi-billion-dollar industry from zero. And it was because it worked. And it struck me that it was short-sighted to think that search was so important simply because of the text link ads. It was important because user and consumer behavior was changing, and people were starting to expect companies to talk to them. On the publisher side, as you asked, what I started noticing was the publishers, and I use this term not in a traditional sense, but, you know, talented individuals and companies capable of bringing, you know, audiences to a place to have, you know, to interact with content, right? Publishers were starting to see really phenomenal and significant changes in the economic realities of their business. Boing Boing called me, you know, in early 2004, and I'd been blogging for a while, and we had been working together informally because many of the people who, the four freelance freelance journalists who comprised, Boing Boing used to work with me at Wired or the Industry Standard. And they called me up and they said, John, I got a problem. I said, well, what's the problem? They said, my hosting bill is $500 a month. And now I ran a little site called SearchBlog, which my hosting bill was $19 a month. So I found it hard to believe that any blog, or you know, in 2004 early, could justify that large a hosting bill. And I said, you know, are you guys posting video, or you know, what do you got? You're posting big files. What are you doing? You're crazy. No, we're not. And I said, well, let's take a look at your server logs. And it turns out that they had 500,000 visitors a month, and they hadn't spent a dollar on marketing. They hadn't spent a dollar on distribution. And those are the two largest costs in a traditional media business, to acquire an audience. And it struck me that the economics of publishing were shifting, you know, very, very significantly. And, of course, we'd all talked about this for years. The Internet flattens the distribution curve. The Internet makes, you know, changes everything about how you acquire audience and media and so on and so forth. But here was a very clear example, a blog with an audience as big as Wired Magazine, right, that was complaining about $500 a month being the cost of that, right? And it struck me that these talented individuals that acquired this very large audience, which now has quadrupled to over 2 million in the last 3 years, didn't, you know, as good as they were in creating content and being sort of the leaders of the conversation that Boing Boing is, that doesn't mean that they were good at ad sales or business development or finance or back office operations or, you know, all those other things that you have to do as a publisher. And it struck me that there might be a role for a company that does that for these talented people and helps them become, you know, from the point of view of a marketer, a, you know, real publishing company that they can rely on, transact business with, have a conversation with, and just like they do with what you might call a traditional media company. So FM kind of fills that gap of being the rest of the business for talented individuals and companies, you know, as small as my site, which only really pulls about 60,000 visitors a month, to as large as Dig, which, you know, pulls 17 million. And we've really scaled up as this phenomenon has rolled through the Internet, I think, post the bust of the late 90s, early turn of the century, that people are talented individuals and creators of content are becoming publishers without having to hire, you know, 40 people to align around them in order to be successful.
Yes. So, John, so, I mean, I mentioned earlier, you know, Federated Media gets it. And besides the sites in the Federated Media family and a handful of IT sites who also get it, and I say handful, I mean maybe a couple of handfuls.
Right.
How are traditional publishers providing solutions to help marketers or audiences, you know, engage in those conversational marketing pieces?
Well, I think, you know, I think we're in a learning phase right now. I think we're in the process of figuring things out, and so, you know, you're going to see, you know, different sites be in different kind of, you know, phases of being of figuring out this conversational marketing, you know, concept. Traditional, I call them, and I don't mean this negatively, although I think that some people may see it that way, traditional media companies are very good at creating what I call packaged goods media, you know. And this is true for not just media companies. This is true for almost all businesses. Look at Microsoft, a great example. They're very, very good at making shrink-wrapped software, you know, packaged goods software, but not very good at making software that is, you know, highly iterative and always on, or what I call conversational media. And traditional media companies are very good at Wired. We were very good at making Wired Magazine, and we sweated over every picture and every design and every word in that magazine until we were finished with it, put it to the shipped it to the printer, and we were done with it. It was over. You know, on to the next packaged good that we had to create for the next month. But in the world of media, particularly online, media is more of a conversation. It's less of a packaged good. And because of that, marketing has to become more of a conversation and less of a packaged good. And I think publishers are at various, you know, various points along the road of figuring that out. Newspaper publishers have often been, you know, ridiculed for their lack of ability to be conversationalists, so to speak, to sort of get with the program in terms of blogs and conversational media and social networking and so on. But we have to remember that, you know, 150 years they ruled the roost by creating a package good every single morning. They didn't have to worry about, you know, being always on, you know, being in a conversation.
So in regards to some of these publishers, I mean, at WebEx, we have a few audiences that we market to, IT, sales, marketing, training, and a few others. But so I get to talk to a lot of different publishing folks. And
right.
Like I said, you and the IT folks get it, but I won't name, you know, tell me a couple that just don't get it. And you have your fingers crossed, for them. You're rooting for them, but they don't get it.
You mean in the space of IT and sales?
Well, in this maybe business.
I'm pretty good friends with almost everyone in the media business. I don't want to make any enemies, but
would you say there are a few?
I would say there are a few. Yeah, I've written about this extensively on my site. I think that there is a reaction to the online world that's occurring in very large media companies right now that is driven by a fear of the unknown. And I'll give you two or three examples, Viacom, News Corp, and Time Warner. You know, three of the largest media companies in the world have, in the last year, replaced the people who are in charge of their online properties. And the reason that they've done this, from what I can tell, is that the people they had before were kind of, you know, online maverick types who wanted to pursue what they consider to be a potentially disruptive model. And instead, they've been replaced with people who are insiders from the large media companies, usually television executives. And it strikes me that this strategy, while it makes people feel safe, could be damaging in the long term. Let's just use AOL as a good example of this. Since I just did a voice post earlier today talking about AOL's earnings, I think that, you know, the people running AOL are extremely sharp, and no one is better at selling television advertising, from what I understand. But AOL is a conversational media service. It's a software product. It needs to be driven and built as one. And if, you know, if it's just about selling tonnage, then it's probably not a long-term winner. I think they figured this out, and they're starting to do things about it. But, you know, I think that AOL cut free from Time Warner would be quite possibly a far more successful company than one that has to still bow to the strategic interests of a large company with, you know, massive stakes in traditional approaches to media.
Yeah, John, I think that that's a fair statement for a lot of the different sites or publications, right? The ones who are owned by the large media arms or media giants, they're kind of handcuffed a little bit, and they can't be as you said, maverick-like with their online initiative.
And this is a very right, very classic business you know, case that the larger and more profitable a company gets, the less it's willing to you know, stray from, you know, that which brought you to the dance. You know, there are notable exceptions to this, and you know, I would say, without seeming like I'm log rolling too much, Cisco is one of them. And the strategy it's starting to, you know, the hand it's starting to play right now in terms of its acquisition of WebEx and then other social networking assets. From what I can surmise, there's a strategy there that is pretty radical and pretty interesting.
Yeah, definitely. So John, let me ask some rapid-fire questions. I mentioned, or I asked, who are the publishers that don't get it. Give me one or two from the business side that do get it, actually.
Well, sure. I was kind of sad to see Business 2 go.
Yeah.
Because I do think that Josh Quitner and his cohort really were doing a great job with that magazine and starting to turn it around. And I think what they're starting to do online is very good, too, working with CNN Money. So that was a sad day, not only because I used to write for them, but because Josh is a friend, and I think that as a group of journalists covering an important story, they do get it. I've seen some stuff coming out of CNET in the last year or so from a marketing side that sounds a lot like what we're doing at FM. And now we have a lot of folks from CNET that work here at FM now. But I've always had a soft spot in my heart for that company. And I think that they've had a lack of focus. They bought a lot of different things. But I think when it comes to some core programs, they've been innovative on the marketing side. And I always, you know, have a lot of respect for them. And then there's just a ton of great sites out there that I think get it. Of course, every one of them I really, really like, I try to bring into the FM family. I think the first one that really got my attention a number of years ago was Flashdot. And when I watched what was happening there and then saw what was happening at Digg, I very quickly decided it would be great to work with Digg. Flashdot at that point had already decided to go its own way with advertising. But I think that people don't understand how difficult it is to do the kinds of programs that like the ones we've done together. They require a lot of hand-holding, a lot of thought, a lot of relationship management, and then iteration as the program goes along.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to share too much, but I know that there's something that you did with, or your folks did with us at WebEx, and you helped us build these dynamic content banner ads,
right,
and blogs. So we're not sitting there with this stale message that's been there for 2, 3, 4 weeks.
This is really exciting stuff, and we've got a ton of examples of this. But there's no reason why you should see a media plan as a static thing. Media plans can actually build assets. Media plans can become distribution networks for your own content. Media plans can be the most exciting part of an advertising campaign. And oftentimes they get the butt end. It's sort of like, well, the creative guys get all the glory, and the media plan, you know, is sort of what gets done at the end with the guys who have spreadsheets, you know. But deciding where you're going to buy is as important as deciding what you're going to put in there. And when the two work in concert, as in the case that you relayed, it's really exciting. So yeah, you know, people get so stuck on I've got a packaged good approach to my content. My creative is perfect. I'm going to roll it out across the plan, and we'll see how it does. The idea of changing your creative every time you update a blog post, so that the creative actually is from what you're posting on your site and it comes into the ad unit, is a pretty remarkable idea, but it's proven through, you know, return on investment metrics to be a much better approach to, you know, standard measurement in terms of response, because people get used to seeing your creative as actually adding value to the conversation of the site where they're visiting. Oh, I look up here, there's that WebEx banner or the Semantic banner or whatever, where I know there's going to be fresh stuff. That's good. That's just a good thing. All of a sudden, you are saying, well, in the advertising space that I have, leased, so to speak, I'm going to add value in that space. I'm not just going to try to, you know, distract you or convince you of something or wheedle or cajole or yell. I'm going to understand and respect the values and mores of the site I'm on, and I'm going to add value to that site. And I think that lesson really comes from search. Because it was search advertising that I think really got a lot of marketers to realize that advertising could be useful because it's so relevant and contextually relevant to a person's search. And I think that lesson shouldn't just, you know, begin and end at search marketing. It should, you know, infect brand marketing as well.
Yeah, no, we can have this conversation. We can go on for an hour on
that. Exactly.
A lot of strong feelings on that, and I know that, you know, your group has done some wonderful stuff with us, so we are not interrupting the conversation that's going on the blog, but we're trying to interact and trying to, you know, like you said, have content that's changing every day. But, John, let me switch to something else. Let me switch to a conference that's coming up. Federated Media is launching the first Conversational Marketing Summit, and it's on September 12th and the 11th.
Right.
And tell me what this is about, and why is the industry moving towards this type of conference?
Well, I think we're moving there because the audiences are moving there, and I think that, you know, it's clear if you just look at any rankings, no matter, you know, take your pick, they're not all great, but they're all showing one thing, which is that conversational and social media sites are growing. and they're growing much faster than any other segment of the internet. And that tells you that the audience is going there. If the audience is going there, that means that your customer is going there and that you want to go there too. So I came up with the idea for this summit about 6 months ago, and I'm an inveterate, you know, creator of conferences and media. So I just got the sort of same tingly feeling that this industry needs to meet to have a conversation about this idea that, you know, how do we market in a new space? How do we, you know, how do we approach advertising on Facebook, right? I mean, that's I have a ton of ideas, but are they crazy? Well, most of them probably. But to have a forum where you can sit down with the woman who runs marketing at Facebook and the guy who runs it at MySpace and the fellow who runs it at YouTube and the gal who runs it at YouTube and so on, and just say, hey, how do we do this? You know, let's put the cards on the table. And then we'll show case studies of good examples of marketers who have succeeded, and we'll talk about screwing up, because there's no such thing as not screwing up when you're in a new industry. But dialogue, you know, inside an industry as it's emerging has always fascinated me, and has been something that I've been part of, you know, since Wired was launched. And so it just struck me it was time.
So, John, where can this audience go to get more information? Would that be the Federated Media website?
Yeah, they can just go to the federatedmedia.net site and then hit the tab for events, and you'll see the CM Summit. Or I imagine if you just Google or live search or Yahoo search, whatever your flavor is, Conversational Marketing Summit, you'll find it as well. And you can register there, and I would encourage anyone listening to do it quickly, because we're very close to full, which is a great sign. We're limiting it to about 300 for the first year, and the interest has been very, very strong.
That's great, John. Also, I mean, you have brands like Absolute, Cisco, GM, HP, Nike, Symantec, Virgin.
Yep. And they'll be presenting case studies, and representatives will be there to talk about what they're doing and just interact and then listen. And so it should be a very good conversation.
Great. You have large brands, agencies, and media there. Everyone's
there. Yep. That was the goal, is to kind of get all the stakeholders in the room at the same time. And I'm really honored that people believe enough in FM to come and have this conversation. It feels like the right thing for us to do, to sort of be the host for this event.
Well, great, John. Listen, I want to thank you for your time and sharing some of your thoughts on, you know, marketing 2.0 and conversational marketing and where it's going.
I'm more than happy to, and I'm honored that you would ask, so thanks very much.
Well, listen, good luck at the conference, and we'll see you there.
Very good. Take care.
Thank you, John.